From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. According to the Kaiser Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization that centers on healthcare issues facing the U.S., there are stark and persistent racial disparities in maternal and infant health throughout the country. And that's despite advancements in medicine and efforts to fight systemic racism. More specifically, women who are Black and Indigenous, that is, Native American and Alaska Native, have higher rates of pregnancy-related deaths compared to women who are white. It's been an issue for decades, and Illinois is no exception. According to the Illinois Department of Public Health's Maternal Morbidity and Mortality Report, released in 2018, Black women are 6 times as likely to die of a pregnancy-related condition as their white counterparts. But there are people working to change this. One such effort is to have more doulas, midwives, and other maternal health educators from the same background as the pregnant women they're working with. It's easier to find that sort of help in the Chicago area, but it's been more challenging downstate, and so that's why we're revisiting our conversation on the need for better maternal health for people of color south of Interstate 80. Joining us for this conversation was Margarita Teron, Assistant Dean and Program Leader of Integrated Health Disparities for the University of Illinois Extension, and also Isis Rose, the co-founder and executive director for BIPOC for Better Birth, an organization that offers free or low-cost training for BIPOC people looking to become doulas, midwives, and other maternal professionals in Central Illinois. Because this conversation's on tape, we're not taking your calls live today, but you can always let us know what you thought by emailing talk@21stshow.org. Okay, here now is our conversation on maternal health disparities among women of color. So, Isis Rose, I want to begin with you. For our audience, can you explain to us, just basically, what do people who are work as doulas and midwives, what do they do?
Okay, thank you. Yes. So I love this question because people often confuse doulas with midwives. So doulas are your pregnancy and birth cheerleaders, let's say, right? They're the folks that are going to be meeting with you prenatally to provide informational support, educational support, of course, physical support during labor, as well as support postpartum during, you know, a vulnerable time in a person's life, having a new baby. A midwife, on the other hand, is the person who's going to be providing that more medical care. They're the ones that are responsible for the health and the outcome of the birth for both the birthing person or the mother and the infant.
Margarita, I want to bring you into the conversation now. Can you then talk about what are some of the causes for the maternal health disparities I was referring to in the introduction to our conversation today?
Thank you for having me and good morning. Well, there are many reasons because there are, you know, chronic conditions that predispose some individuals, the differences in the implicit bias on healthcare providers, there are issues on the healthcare providers, and there are many maternal deserts that there are not having enough care providers that provide the sufficient workforce identity. Many providers are not Hispanic, Black, providers. There are not enough OBGYNs that can provide this information. They also, there are not quality of care changes from north to south in our state. And that is very important. There's implicit bias in the services that they can afford some individuals. And access is very important in those areas. Many of the individuals are not aware of chronic conditions that they can put them at risk. And they are not good advocates for their healthcare services. So it's very important risk factors. There are other determinants of health like education, transportation, food security that are impacting the health outcomes of these mothers.
If you're just joining us, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're revisiting our conversation on the racial disparities in maternal health before, during, and after pregnancy and the efforts to fight against this. We were joined for this conversation by Margarita Teron, Assistant Dean and Program Leader of Integrated Health Disparities at the University of Illinois Extension, and Isis Rose, Executive Director and Co-Founder of BIPOC for Better Birth. Because we're on tape, we're not taking calls, but let us know what you thought by leaving a voicemail at 217-300-2121. 217-300-2121. Okay, there is a lot there to unpack from maternal deserts. I've certainly heard the desert phrase used in a lot of different contexts. This is the first time I think I've heard it as a maternal desert, but that makes sense. All the way through some of the other issues you were talking about, and we'll get to some of those as we go on. But Isis, is there anything you want to add to what Margarita had to say there about what are some of the causes for these maternal health disparities?
Sure. So I'm glad that Margarita raised these issues such as implicit bias. And I would also argue that there are aspects of birth in our modern world today that, you know, complicate birth. You know, medicalized childbirth is the kind of birth that prioritizes high-tech interventions and treats most people as high risk when in fact, I believe, as someone who is studying to be a midwife and someone who supports the midwifery model of care, that birth should be less complicated, right? We should understand that bodies were designed to give birth and that most people are low risk. And so the very nature of having medicalized birth means here in the United States, where the maternal mortality rates are actually getting worse compared to other developed nations, you know, we're seeing a high C-section rate. 33% of births result in a C-section or a cesarean section. And the World Health Organization and other organizations would say that that's entirely too high. We should be seeing rates around 15 to 20%. And so, although this is the most common form of surgery that exists, it's major abdominal surgery. And because women of color in particular are deemed high risk more than other groups, so many women of color are experiencing primary cesareans or being managed as a high-risk pregnancy, and then they're having abdominal birth, and that results to complications in the postpartum time. We're seeing people dying preventable deaths that are a result of things like infection, sepsis, pulmonary embolism, hemorrhage, eclampsia, or end organ failure. And so the very nature of birth in today's society in the United States also contributes to these maternal deaths.
Absolutely. I'm sorry to interject, but you are really, minorities are subject to more rates of cesarean than white populations, and that shouldn't happen. This is something that we need to interject, and I really appreciate you make attention to that. Yes.
If you're just joining us, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're revisiting our conversation on the racial disparities in maternal health before, during, and after pregnancy, and the efforts to fight against this. We were joined for this conversation by Margarita Terón, Assistant Dean and Program Leader of Integrated Health Disparities at the University of Illinois Extension, and Isis Rose, Executive Director and Co-Founder of BIPOC for Better Birth. Because we're on tape, we're not taking calls, but let us know what you thought by leaving a voicemail at 217-300-2121, 217-300-2121. So, Margarita, can you talk more, what form does implicit bias take in this context when somebody goes to see their doctor? What would that look like in practice?
Well, first, the workforce doesn't reflect the racial and ethnic identities of the U.S. Just think about it that only, you know, if the Black and Hispanic or other identities are 14 to 20%, the Black of doctors and the Black midwives and of doulas is less than 10% or 5% for nurses and doulas. And so, therefore, there are some misconceptions about practices and ideas. And that's why the CDC has developed this campaign about Hear Her, because sometimes their concerns about pain, their concerns about issues of about breastfeeding are minimized. And that is very important because those implicit bias minimize the real concerns of those women in aspects of healthcare. Those are important because those racist and implicit lack of empathy and attention to those women could have serious consequences in the health outcomes.
Isis Rose, do you want to add to that? And how do you see systemic racism, or I guess implicit bias, at play in the work you've done?
Sure. So I'd like to just, echo what I said previously about maternal deaths being preventable. And I know that personally, I stay fired up about this work because, these issues, these biases, they're starting to hit close to home for me, and in my network, I see people having poor outcomes. I see maternal deaths like on a monthly basis now. I'm thinking about April Valentine, LaShonda Hazard, Kira Johnson, Erica Garner. And just in December, I attended my first maternal death related funeral for a college classmate who died a week after giving birth. And I think that so much of implicit bias, it looks like not believing someone when they're telling you that they're in pain, when their partner says, hey, something's wrong, medical neglect, waiting for hours for care in emergent situations. People are just taking for granted people's cries for help, and that's not okay. But if you were maybe, let's say, a privileged, white woman, people are going to be at your bedside. They're going to be taking your concerns seriously. And I've seen this as a doula, I've seen this just in my network, my peers, people have told me their stories time and time again. So this is definitely an issue that is documented both anecdotally, but also with real statistics.
If you're just joining us, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're revisiting our conversation on the racial disparities in maternal health before, during, and after pregnancy, and the efforts to fight against this. We were joined for this conversation by Margarita Teron, Assistant Dean and Program Leader of Integrated Health Disparities at the University of Illinois Extension, and Isis Rose, Executive Director and Co-Founder of BIPOC for Better Birth. Because we're on tape, we're not taking calls, but let us know what you thought by leaving a voicemail at 217-300-2121, 217-300-2121. So Isis, what is the benefit then of having a doula or a midwife or a maternal health educator of the same background as the expecting mother? How does that improve the situation?
So thank you for that question. Yes. Part of my work is to train doulas, especially doulas of color. And I would say that, in these situations, when you are faced with a medical provider who has years of experience and knowledge that you don't have as the consumer, the person giving birth, you feel very vulnerable. There's this thing called white coat syndrome where you don't really feel like you have the space to really speak up and advocate for yourself. And so doulas give you the tools to do that. They teach you about how to have informed consent conversations and ways to ask questions and really advocate for yourself. Also, when we're talking about labor and giving birth, right? Relaxation is the work of labor, but fear and unease hinders that relaxation. And so there's a lot of ease that comes with being in relationship with a doula, someone who knows you on some level, who's with you for months, coaching you. And there's ease that comes with them being there, holding space for you, and also sharing your background, your cultural background, your language. It's just having someone in your corner that you know will help you to ask those hard questions.
Margarita, for expecting mothers who are Latina or Hispanic, and maybe English isn't their first language, is that also a barrier here? How do you see that affecting people?
This is one of the highest barriers because some of them don't feel at ease also for us a translator. And even sometimes even members of the families are translators. The medical doctors don't request also translators, and because they know that they could take twice as much time in the attention of that patient, they don't have the patient to the patients, to spend more time mothers, expectant mothers, and therefore the mothers are confident they receive the attention and the care they needed. And so they don't know that the providers spend enough time with them, and they don't feel that they can speak openly about their pregnancy with their providers. That affects overall the strength and the ability for them to advocate for when they have questions about what concerns about diseases, high blood pressure, bleeding, control of glucose. I have heard about women that they didn't know that they had diabetes during their pregnancy, and they were feeling so guilty that they were not taking care of those babies or themselves during the pregnancy because they were not explained that they have diabetes during their pregnancy or high blood pressure, but this was because the provider didn't spend enough time to talk about the risk that high blood pressure or a condition will affect their life or the life of their babies during that pregnancy. So I think that this is a, and the language barrier is an extra barrier for attention and care. So those are very important issues in the health outcomes for mothers and babies.
Okay, we need to take a quick break. When we return, the rest of our conversation with Margarita Tenon and Isis Rose about efforts to fight maternal health disparities in downstate Illinois. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Today, we're revisiting our conversation on the racial disparities in maternal health before, during, and after pregnancies. The Illinois Department of Public Health says Black women are 6 times more likely to die from a pregnancy-related condition compared to women who are white. One way to help fight this is to introduce more doulas and other maternal experts who are Black, Indigenous people of color. The idea is they're better equipped to help people from different backgrounds. But while that kind of help is easier to find in the Chicago area, it's pretty challenging downstate. Joining us for this conversation was Margarita Tenon, Assistant Dean and Program Leader of Integrated Health Disparities with the University of Illinois Extension. Also, Isis Rose, co-founder and executive director of BIPOC for Better Birth, which is an organization that offers free or low-cost training for Black, Indigenous people of color looking to become maternal experts. Because our conversation's on tape, we're not taking calls live, but you can always let us know what you thought by emailing talk@21stshow.org. So, Isis, can you talk about how difficult is it to find people to do this sort of work downstate? What is the recruiting challenge?
Yes, thank you. So it's difficult because there are only a handful of doulas in this area in particular. If we're talking about doulas, let's start there. There's only a handful of us who identify as BIPOC, and we're serving multiple counties. And doula work honestly isn't very sustainable unless there are a lot of doulas doing it. And that's because the work is very intense. We're on call, we're providing at least 12 hours of continuous labor support. We have to be able to shift our plans at the drop of a hat if someone goes into labor. And so having backup doulas and other people that you can rely on if you are unavailable for any reason, it's really important. And so having a larger cohort of doulas means we can provide this care and do this work more long term.
And Margarita, do you have any perspective on that? Is it difficult finding people to do this sort of work?
Well, I cannot comment exactly about doulas, but I can comment regarding the lack of access to OBGYNs and medical providers and people certified to provide this type of care across the state. And there are counties like in the south area of our state that they don't have enough providers because the centers are getting closed. And there are not enough providers that can provide support those women, and less providers that are bilingual or provide translation services. And those are a very important limitations. So we're not training enough nurses that are bilingual. We are not training enough doctors who are Hispanic or Latinos who can provide that type of support.
Isis, last summer, I want to ask about, we saw the overturning of Roe against Wade, the longstanding Supreme Court decision that had made abortion a constitutional right in America. Since then, we've seen some states take action to limit the services that abortion clinics, reproductive health clinics provide. This hasn't been really an issue in Illinois because of state laws here that favor abortion rights, but how does this play into systematic health disparities?
I'm so glad that you asked this question, Brian, because I would like to talk about reproductive justice and birth justice for a moment. I think talking about abortion and abortion rights is very critical, especially in the world of maternal health. And I would also like to add that one of the reasons why the birth justice framework, which is an extension of reproductive justice, one of the reasons why it was coined and around 2011 at a Sister Song conference is because so much of what we discuss when we discuss reproductive freedom is the right to choose, right? Pro-choice versus pro-life. So many times that becomes the sole focus of organizing and activism when it comes to birth-related work. And so birth justice is really important because it's a collective movement to confront medical violence and coercion, reclaim the midwifery model of care. And this is a movement that's been growing since 2017. And that's when we kind of been seeing these statistics about maternal health and disparities come into the mainstream media. And I'm just really grateful to be a part of this community of activists and scholars and birth workers who continue to raise the issue or raise the awareness around this issue. And I can't really speak to abortion specific concerns because that's really not my area of expertise, but I do believe that Illinois continues to be one of those states that provides excellent care because, you know, deciding to terminate a pregnancy is very much a part of the reproductive experience.
And Margarita, on the flip side of that, the Illinois General Assembly is considering legislation that would impose restrictions on what are known as crisis pregnancy centers, which are often backed by the anti-abortion movement, and they're sort of the answer to reproductive health centers that do offer abortion services. These places do not. I wonder if you see a potential negative effect on access to maternal health care if those centers become more rare or more restricted.
Well, I'm not an expert in that area in particular, but important is that to provide support to those women who seek support and they want to continue their pregnancies, what is important, and provide a empathetic care is what is important. I think that this is many, very few places who have non-for-profit organization who can offer a empathetic care is what is here. As long as it's a care that is based on evidence and is they don't deceive the individual in what their services are offering, that is what is important. I know there are some representatives that are offering this type of legislation that is still not being passed. What is in, again, the need is to have a empathetic support for those women who wants to continue their pregnancy under convenient care, and if they want to deliver that baby in a healthy environment and they want to provide that baby for adoption, that's a wonderful thing to happen, right? That is what is necessary. I think this has to be a balance in that type of law and support those women who want to continue that pregnancy and provide a healthy baby, a healthy home in the future. And what is important, again, is to provide that woman and that baby a healthy, happy life in whatever condition is necessary.
If you're just joining us, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're revisiting our conversation on the racial disparities in maternal health before, during, and after pregnancy, and the efforts to fight against this. We were joined for this conversation by Margarita Terón, Assistant Dean and Program Leader of Integrated Health Disparities at the University of Illinois Extension, and Isis Rose, Executive Director and Co-Founder of BIPOC for Better Birth. Because we're on tape, we're not taking calls, but let us know what you thought by leaving a voicemail at 217-300-2121. 217-300-2121. So Isis, what goes into doula training? Is this something that people can do at the community college? How does one learn to become a doula?
Yeah, so doula training is commonly a weekend training, maybe 2 weekends. So we're looking at 30 to 40 hours of training typically. And it's not a degree program. It's not something that you usually see in the college context, but it's a certification process. So there's usually some sort of in-person training. And at this training, we will teach comfort measures, how to reduce pain during labor, that sort of thing, the stages of labor, how to support a family during the prenatal time, during labor and birth and postpartum. And we also cover lactation and how to provide education and basic breastfeeding support. And then we also discuss perinatal mood and anxiety disorders and the spectrum of illnesses that can manifest during postpartum. So much of the attention is paid on postpartum depression when there are a lot of things that could affect someone after having a baby. And, training is step one, right? You do your training, you get your certification, and then you start attending births. And I think experience is the greatest teacher. So we always encourage our doulas to get out there and start supporting families.
Isis, how do you connect with clients? Is that a challenge at all? Like making sure that the people who you are aiming to help know that you are out there and standing ready to work with them?
Mm-hmm. So I've been a doula since 2018, on paper 2016, but in reality, 2018, I supported my first family. So I have a track record, so it's not difficult for people to find me necessarily, but in general, if you're not really tapped into the kind of parenting, pregnancy networks in your community, you may not really know what search terms to look for. You may not even know.
This is exactly, I'm sorry to interrupt. This is exactly what I'm thinking of, though, because I mean, I think there's a stereotype, and correct me if I'm wrong, that doulas are more of like, upper middle class to and above sort of thing that people think about. Maybe mm-hmm. that's changing. Maybe you're working to change that. And that's what I'm getting at, I guess.
Right. So absolutely. I think so. The word doula was kind of coined in the 70s and maybe even until the last eight years or so, let's say it has been, this kind of thing that is only affordable for people of a certain, class background or what have you. And so you're right. There has been this kind of understanding that this is something that only wealthy people can afford or things like that. But there are several, agencies and programs that provide doulas. The agencies themselves will pay the doulas. I think of Health Connect One. I think of Children's Home and Aid. There are organizations that exist that will provide a free doula, and one of the reasons why it was important for us to host our doula training last month is to kind of also, break this stereotype of what a doula is and who a doula serves. And so I think you're exactly right. I think the doula world is absolutely changing. And I think I'm really proud of the work that's being done across the country, but especially in the state of Illinois, as far as doula Medicaid reimbursement so that the doulas who do work privately can get paid, because it's a lot of work, and all doulas deserve to be paid, whether they're a private doula or working for an agency.
And I think I'm going to second what you're saying, because if there are more doulas trained and competent, we can have less cesareans and more at ease if they are competent and, again, taking care of individuals who speak to themselves into their communities of service. I wish there are more doulas that are Hispanics that they can serve the Hispanic community.
Margarita, one question that we haven't really talked about as much. We talked about the language barrier and some of the cultural and class barriers. I wonder if immigration status, is that something you see affecting maternal health here in Illinois?
Yeah, that is the reason many women don't look for maternal care until they are in the fifth month of pregnancy, because they are concerned that there are not places where they can offer a significant health care, and many reasons of why this pregnancy is a desired or undesired pregnancy. And there are many circumstances of that are affecting emotionally that mom during that pregnancy. So there are much work that needs to be done in that area. the support for that woman who has doesn't know the rights for herself or for that baby that is going to be delivered is also very important. So there are concerns that they're going to be deported. What are the rights for that baby? The discrimination that happens when that baby is delivered in the hospital is very important. The way that are mistreated in the hospitals are very sad. And it is the reason many women are afraid to go to the hospital for the type of attention they receive. And I have seen and hear some of the cases and the complaints of those ladies. That makes me feel very sad. They don't receive enough education about breastfeeding. And they all offer immediately, not the, now it's getting better, but offering a colostrum, which is the first milk that the mothers have. Now it's getting better, offering that that first milk and giving a support for that mom to breastfeed the babies. All things are happening in this area are getting better. There are the programs like in CAR that are supporting the first 1,000 days of the babies in education programs. And in extension, there are other programs that support the nutrition education to those mothers. The public health departments are also supporting that type of educational programs, but not all the information is translated in Spanish. So there are not enough community health workers and educators that speak Spanish and can provide that information.
We're coming to the end of our time together. Isis Rose, I want to ask you, the reality is that not every expecting mother who is Black or Latina or any other indigenous is going to be able to find someone that shares their background. How can a doula or a midwife or a maternal health educator or a physician or a nurse who's not from the BIPOC community, how can they help expecting mothers who are?
You're absolutely right. Margarita spoke to the lack of representation in the medical field, and that extends to midwifery as well, and even the doula community. So, you know, it's important that we have allies and people who will treat, you know, pregnant people with dignity, no matter their cultural background, who will believe them, you know, when they say that they're in pain or that they have specific needs. I think another really good thing is for people to refer. You know, don't be afraid to refer out if you feel like there is a provider who is more in alignment with this woman of color. You know, if you're a white, you know, midwife, and you know of a Black midwife who does home birth or is working, you know, in a different clinic, and you're like, you know what, I'm gonna refer out. You know, there's, you know, we encourage that. We encourage people to take time and learn about the issue. You know, this week is Black Maternal Health Week, and there have been dozens of events and webinars and, you know, keynotes and all types of things that you can register for and learn more about birth justice and the Black maternal health movement. And, you know, I think that it just really goes a long way to arm yourself with information and to believe Black women.
And that was our conversation on maternal health disparities in Illinois and the efforts to fight them. We'd love to hear what you think about what we've been talking about, whether it's today's program or any topic in the recent past. You can leave a voicemail anytime, day or night. 217-300-2121 is the number, 217-300-2121. You can find that number and every other way to contact us on our website, 21stshow.org. More to come after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us.